You are listening to Stash My Comics Podcast, Episode 2. Welcome to the Stash My Comics Podcast. I am your host, Matt B., known on the StashMyComics.com forum. And with me is Jason Newcomb.
Hi, I am Jason Newcomb, and I tend to mix up my nerd franchises. Excelsiors, may the force be with you.
So Jason and I are finally in podcast number 2. For those of you who did not hear the first one, it went pretty well, but we had some definite delay issues. You might not have noticed it if you listened to it, but I had to go back in and edit out a lot of the pausing. So we don't have that problem now. So when I talk, I hear Jason directly after I talk instead of 2 or 3 seconds. So that's a nice perk. Let's go ahead and jump right into the news.
News.
So Jason sent me a lot of news items. I've been kind of out of the loop, but I do know that there is an Avengers versus X-Men event coming up. And I was curious, Jason, are you excited about this event at all?
No. Actually, I'm exaggerating. Let's say I'm curious about it. I have no vested interest in the characters at this point because I haven't been reading them. But you know, it's another Marvel event off the heels of. So far, none of it is making me excited. Their top writers are on it, and they're obviously going to put their top artists. So I guess we'll see. I think this is going to be like a weekly thing or a bi-weekly thing.
Yeah, I think bi-weekly. It's going to get its own comic, and I'm assuming it'll cross over into the 50 X-Men books and the dozen or so Avengers books.
I don't know. It could turn out to be good. If the reviews are good, I might check it out. And if it's got extra pages for the extra buck, they're gonna no doubt charge for it.
Yeah.
It sort of reminds me of when DC did 52, mm-hmm. Not the new 52, but the weekly series. It was like a collaborative effort, multiple writers, multiple artists, and that was an excellent storyline. And it was a weekly one, but that also involved like lesser known characters, so it was more of kind of a propping up these kind of C-listers, whereas this event is taking the two hugest franchises at Marvel and just you know, kind of smashing them together. But I mean, there's nothing inherently wrong with it, but so far, I have my reservations.
Yeah, I would be more willing to pick it up if I knew it wasn't going to be $3.99. But it does intrigue me. I'll probably at least go ahead and get the first couple issues to see where it's going. I do like the fact that they've kind of propped up the X-Men again. I feel like they've kind of gotten lost in the Avengers shuffle here lately, and with everything that's gone on with the X-Men. I'm interested to see where Wolverine goes, because from what I hear, it's probably going to be a Cyclops and the X-Men versus Avengers, and Wolverine will have to kind of pick a side.
If you go in the Marvel Universe forum at the Stash My Comics forum, that's stashmycomics.com/html/forums, someone posted a link to a review of the first time this was done in 1987. At that time it was called X-Men versus the Avengers. So very different.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what happened in that storyline, and I don't know if it's this new event is going to be referring to that one, but maybe some hardcore Marvel guys or girls can inform us on this when they comment on our show.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely the right move for them with all the attention that's been heaped upon DC. They had to pull out a pretty big event, and these are obviously their two biggest groups. So should be interesting. Do we want to talk about another news item? Your choice.
Just this one's really fresh, just hot, fresh off the press, hot out of the oven. I don't know, I'm mixing my metaphors. The Dark Knight Rises viral marketing campaign is ramping up. If you go to comicbookmovie.com, I'll post links to these documents that have been released as part of the viral marketing campaign in the blog article where you can find this this podcast, dashmycomics.com/blog. So they released stuff like from Central Intelligence Agency that looked like top secret classified documents that are blacked. A lot of big parts of them are blacked out. And part of these documents was a recurring motif, code name Operation Early Bird. And if you go to operationearlybird.com, at that time, there was a countdown timer on this website. And as soon as I got home from work, I checked it out, and that there's a couple hours left on the timer. And as soon as the timer expired, basically the page became non-functional because there was so much traffic going to this website at this time. So it took a few minutes for them to work that out, I think, on the back end. And when it finally started working, you'll see if you go to operationearlybird.com, it's a map with like point markers.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Interesting.
Yeah, if you click on these markers, you'll see that they're actually the locations of IMAX theaters, and you get the option of buying tickets. At first, I thought it was, if you'll see in the blog post I made about this news flash, I thought it was, I assumed is being able to buy Dark Knight Rises tickets already, but that's not the case. You can buy tickets to 10 p.m. showings of Ghost Protocol, which in front of which will run the prologue to Dark Knight Rises. So basically, this it sounds like the same thing they did when the Dark Knight movie came out a few years ago, where they actually released a full scene instead of a trailer. It was the Joker's bank robbery scene back then. So I'm assuming that's a similar thing they're doing this time. They're going to actually air, they're calling it a prologue. So I don't know if it's a short film to introduce the movie or if it's an actual scene from the film itself. So no doubt within a week or so that will leak on the internet, and do our best to Twitter it or post it on the blog.
Cool. Yeah, there will more than likely be a very poor, shaky, handheld phone version of it up on YouTube shortly after it comes up.
Yeah, and then 3 days later they'll release like a 1080p streaming one on,
Yeah.
iTunes.
Yeah. Cool. All right.
Sorry,
Go ahead.
did you want me to go with the third news item, Action Comics number one, selling at Comic Connect?
Yeah, I wanted to hear more about that. I didn't get a chance to look at that.
It's actually this is kind of a weird story. If you follow the like high stakes like vintage comics collecting market, which I do peripherally, you'll know that some celebrities are actually comic collectors, like vintage comic collectors. Samuel L. Jackson is known for being a comic collector, and so is Nicolas Cage. But Nicolas Cage's some key items in Cage's collection were stolen, such as his copy of Action Comics number one. That was a while ago. Now, it would appear that this copy, which sold for 2.1 million, is the one which was recovered from this theft. So I don't know if Cage was insured for this, or how he's involved in this, but it broke the record for highest selling comic book of all time, and it sold for $2.1 million. Yeah, it's the highest graded action comics ever. I think it's a 9.0, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he said it looks like the unidentified man claims that he bought it in an abandoned San Fernando Valley, California storage locker. That sounds sketchy.
Indeed. And of course, they can't. Comic Connect is not at liberty to disclose the identity of the buyer.
Right.
So we don't know exactly what's going on. But I thought it was interesting. I mean, if maybe you want to go raid your attic and hopefully find a copy of Action Comics number one and maybe a 9.2.
Somebody years ago found I guess the first appearance of Batman in Detective Comics. They found an issue in an antique desk that they had bought at like a, I don't know, garage sale or something, and they took out their drawers and underneath found that beauty of a comic.
Well, that's something to retire on.
Yeah.
Final news item. We got
Yep.
time.
Yep. Let's do it.
Brian Michael Bendis said he's done with the Avengers. He's going to wrap up, I think, this storyline. I'm not really sure. I'm looking at the Comic Book Resources article right now. I can't see which issue where he's ending on, but yeah, he's been writing the Avengers for a long time, I think 100 consecutive issues, so it's quite the accomplishment. Yeah, so he's gonna stop writing the Avengers. No announcements have been made that I know of who's taking over the book after him. But yeah, that's going to be a kind of a mini event, and we're gonna do our best to do a write up on the blog about his run on the Avengers, which is no doubt to be go going to be considered a classic run. So, yeah, so that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, and I reading here, it looks like he's wrapping up both Avengers and New Avengers in a storyline called Avengers Assemble. So maybe they'll be combining those two. I do not know. I don't read it. Do you read Avengers?
I read issue 18 because it was the start of a new storyline, and I actually really liked it. I reviewed it on the blog there, and though I was not usually a fan of shoot, what's his name, the artist, Acuna, Daniel Acuna, I thought he was really good in this issue, but I couldn't keep reading the book at $4. I
Yeah.
need more pages for $4. If it was incredibly awesome, I'd keep reading it, but it was great, not a transformational experience.
Yeah.
So I decided to not keep reading.
Yeah, those $4 hurts. You know, that's
Yeah, it stinks.
if you're not getting a lot of pages out of that, it really stings the wallet. And three's not really all that better, but when you consider you can get, you know, four comics for three as opposed to, you know, three for four, that extra 30 pages wins every time in my book.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to, I guess, let's go into reviews.
Let's do so.
Do you want to do review first?
Sure. I'm picking Shade. They're calling it the Shade Master of Darkness. I picked this up just based on the good reviews. Have no clue who the Shade is, but I mean it's got a nice cover. And it was when I opened it up, I saw that it was drawn by Cully Hamner, who drew the backup or the co-feature, as they call it, back during Batwoman in the 850s. It was a backup featuring Renee Montoya as the Question, which I regret not collecting the whole thing because now I'm looking for it because I'm a big Question fan. But he's an excellent artist. I really like his artwork. So I just figured I'd try it. I didn't know much about James Robinson. I knew him of Starman fame and a little bit of a few other things, but that's about it. And this was awesome. This was hilarious. I think it's not selling as well because it's not part of like officially part of the new 52. It doesn't even have like a new 52 like a banner on it or anything. But man, this is awesome. The thing that got me first is, like I mentioned, the artwork, and then is the dialogue is so great. You have this guy who's the Shade, who's talking it up over tea with the new Starman. As far as I can tell, he's a new Starman, and that's a beautiful thing. I don't know anything about these characters, and I completely like could follow the story, and you don't need to know who the Shade is. You don't need to know who Starman is. You can just kind of jump into their conversation. And the Shade is feeling kind of depressed, and Starman isn't helping with his kind of a depressive conversation subjects, like can superheroes ever have a happy life, like have kids, a family, or any sort of like solace in their life. And it's just the way they talk to one another is so interesting. The turns of phrases, and it's hard to describe. It's very, very well done and captivating. It's not often you can read like several pages of just guys talking in a comic and actually be interested, but it works here. The basic plot is that someone's after the Shade, and one of the Shade's friends, who is an ultimate badass, he dispatches these superheroes quite efficiently, and he's got no superpowers. He's just got like this what looks like some sort of Luger, and he finds out somebody's after the Shade in this during this fight scene. So he's gotta go warn the Shade. Meanwhile, the Shade is we get a little bit of a like we get to know his love interest, whose name is Hope. And she's kind of exasperated with the Shade a little bit because he keeps worrying that they're going to break up. This character is pretty interesting. We don't get to know a lot about her. We know that she's some sort of special agent of some sort of organization, but again, the magic here is in the dialogue. It's gotta be read to so you can see how awesome the dialogue is. So Shade is kind of overlooking Opal City, which is the home of Starman, for those who are familiar with Starman. And he's just sort of like in a funk. At the end, Deathstroke makes an appearance, and Deathstroke's obviously been hired to kill the Shade. And the way that this scene plays out is awesome. Like, fans of Deathstroke are going to love this.
See, you just perked my interest when you mentioned Deathstroke, because
Oh yeah, this is hilarious. This
I've.
is awesome. And Deathstroke, it that the well, spoilers, the way it ends is he kills the Shade. He decapitates him, despite the Shade, putting up an effort, which is completely futile. But this is brutal. He just chops his hands off, slashes him across the chest, and then decapitates him. So it this is not this is they really did this. They killed the Shade. So obviously, I love these like kill the character in the first issue thing, and then find out how he gets out of this, because I mean, how is he gonna get out of, losing his head?
Yeah.
So it's just really well done. The dialogue, the artwork, and the basic plot, the way it's kind of doled out is really good. I was really impressed with this. It's a limited series, one of 12. So yeah, check it out. It's really good.
Yeah, anything with Deathstroke in it these days, I'm trying to pick up. I don't, have you been picking up any of the Deathstroke single issues?
I picked up the Flashpoint Deathstroke tie-in,
The
and
pirate Deathstroke.
yeah, I thought that was pretty okay. I was kind of surprised by it. I didn't really have any expectations, so I liked it. And I checked out the first two issues of the new ongoing, and it's really well drawn. It's got beautiful covers, but it's just not meaty enough for me. It needs more like meat to the plot and the characterization. I feel like those two issues didn't really, that just wasn't enough in it for me to really sink my teeth into.
Yeah, I liked it only because for the same reasons you didn't like it, I kind of liked it because it wasn't very meaty and deep, and I could just read it, and it read like a, an 80s action film to me, like a Clint Eastwood pirate kind of story, and you really can just shut your brain off and read it and have fun, and then go to the next comic that's maybe a little deeper.
Yeah, I think I know some guys who are going to be listening to this podcast who are going to agree with you.
Well, speaking of deeper books, I'm going to segue into the book that I chose, and I chose this out of the blue because I wasn't going to read this, and that's Birds of Prey number 3. I hadn't read any of the previous two, so I picked those up, and I enjoyed them so much, I picked up the third and decided to talk about that, so I would kind of stay relevant here. But have you read any of the new Birds of Prey or the old Birds of Prey?
I did not read the old Birds of Prey. I did read the first issue of this new series,
Okay.
but I am familiar roughly with like who's in the team of Birds of Prey and basically what they're about.
The first thing that drew me away from this was, well, I'm a big fan of Gail Simone's, and I felt like, her last run on Birds of Prey was just perfect. And when they were bringing them back, and I saw that a lot of the characters had nothing to actually do with birds, for some reason I closed my mind to it, which is stupid, because but the other one had this really cool bird theme. I mean, it was hawk and dove, and I mean, Oracle was the only one that didn't have this kind of bird theme. But then I thought, well, Birds of Prey is so much more than just birds. And I love Poison Ivy, so I decided to give this a shot and really loved it. This writer, I'm going to mispronounce his name probably. Dwayne Swierczynski? Does that sound right?
Yeah,
Swierczynski.
I usually say Dwayne S a bunch of letters.
Yeah. And then art by Jesus Saiz, I'm guessing. Colored by June Chung. Let's not forget the colorist. But everything about this series so far is different and interesting. And if you haven't picked it up and you liked the other Birds of Prey, give this one a chance. We basically start off from the very first issue with just Black Canary and this new character, Starling. And she's just basically a chick with tattoos who's kind of rough and tumble, and she likes violence and toting guns and seems to have a lot of fun. And her and Black Canary instantly have this really cool friendship that they're building on slowly. And from what I can tell, this every time I read this plot, I kind of forget what's going on because I'm just concentrating on other things. But it's a bunch of humans in these invisible suits, or suits that have the power to get invisible. And they have these weird things within their brain where if they recite a nursery rhyme, they are able to self-destruct. And so, you know, birds of prey, which at this time is just black canary and starling, are trying to figure out, you know, what's this all about? What kind of element or drug could cause a person to basically explode just by saying certain words? And so the mystery kind of deepens throughout. But while they're trying to solve this, they're continuing to build the team. And what we find out is that the Birds of Prey continuity pre the New 52 stays in place, which I like. So we actually do get a meeting with Barbara Gordon, formerly Oracle, and she's talking to Black Canary. Black Canary's like, it's good to see you up and walking again, and I'm glad you're back, girl. You want to join Birds of Prey? And she's basically like, no. So she asks her for a recommendation, and that's when we meet the third member, Katana. Now, I wasn't that familiar with her. I read a little bit about Katana's history. Did you know this character, Jason, Katana?
No, I wasn't familiar with Katana, nor was I with Starling, because I believe Starling's a brand new creation.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yep, she is. And I guess Katana has appeared, I can't remember, she was in like some of the Outsider books, but her basic story is kind of interesting. I guess her husband was murdered by the, I guess, Japanese mafia, the Yakuza, and she sets off on a trail of vengeance trying to kill all those responsible for killing him. But in the mix of this, she believes that this actually happened. His soul combined with this sword, the katana blade, and would speak to her. And she still runs around thinking, and whether this is actually true or not, that the sword is her husband and he directs her what to do and talks to her. So, you know, she's crazy and Starling's crazy. And eventually we meet Poison Ivy and we all know what she's capable of. So it's this rogue group of females. Black Canary is kind of the only sane one, although she's still wanted for a crime that she was set up for in the previous Birds of Prey run. So this is definitely more along the lines of a Secret Six group, kind of a ragtag, nobody else wants them group of women trying to go about and solve this problem. Excuse me. But, you know, the art's great. The story's great. The character interaction is really fun so far. And, you know, once they pick up Poison Ivy here in this third issue, we really start getting closer to getting to the bottom of this mystery. And I don't want to give anything away, but let's just say, you know, at the end, you're wondering if Black Canary is going to be the next one to utter a nursery rhyme and explode. So I would highly recommend this book. I'm going to keep picking this one up, and this was one that from the beginning I said absolutely not.
I read the first issue, and mostly because I'd heard good things from Dwayne Swierczynski when he wrote Iron Fist.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm familiar with Jesus from his work on Manhunter. And I tried this first issue and I dropped it. And I'll be honest with you, I don't really remember why. Like, it just didn't grab me. It's like the new characters, and I wasn't sure what I like about the plot, if I like the plot. Yeah. I do remember not clicking with Saiz this time around. I felt that compared to his work on Manhunter, this was a little bit weaker. But you're selling me with all this weirdo like nursery rhyme stuff and words that can kill you and the sword husband and all that business. So it sounds like this is all stuff that I like. So I'll probably be dropping something to pick this up.
Yeah, you kind of got to go ahead.
That's okay.
I was just going to say, you kind of have to get towards the end of the second and into the third. You know, for me, once Poison Ivy showed up, that was what kind of brought the group together for me. I'm not big on sort of ninja girls, but you know, her talking sword drew me into her. Starling is a really fun character, and
and she's wicked hot.
Yeah, and as you get to know her, you realize that she's just completely insane. And you know, there's this one great scene where her and Black Canary are escaping from an airport, and they basically escape on a golf cart. And rather than jump off the golf cart and run away or something like that, she drives the golf cart through a window, and it's basically just because she thought it would be fun. And you know, this is the type of stuff that she's doing. But and then you get Poison Ivy in there, who everybody's really unsure of, but she quickly proves herself and actually saves them from one of these exploding people by surrounding them with these gigantic flowers. Kind of weird. Poison Ivy's a lot differently drawn now. She doesn't have that kind of greenish skin, the kind of Tinkerbell looking outfits that she had before. She's got just a green and black sort of skin tight bodysuit, and she's got this black kind of stuff coming, almost looks like tattoos coming up around her cheeks. She's got these really scary green eyes. So they've kind of gothed her up a little bit, if that's a word.
And, so she still has the same powers, like a plant, she can control plant.
From what I can tell, it's the same powers, just a different look. And, you know, like a lot of these new 52 looks, when you first saw them, you were kind of like, whoa. But as you start reading a few issues, they start to grow on you. I know a lot of people that hated Black Canary's new outfit, I being one of them. But the more I got into it, I thought, this is kind of cool. It's kind of futuristic. She really did need an update from the sort of bathing suit with the motorcycle jacket look anyways.
Yeah, I think they look cool. Yeah, I think you sold me. I got a couple of books I was thinking of dropping because I'm not really liking them anyway, so I'll probably drop a couple and try to track down issues 2 and 3.
Okay. Well, speaking of, you know, dropping issues, just out of curiosity, which ones are you going to be dropping?
Probably Aquaman. It's just I'm a Aquaman fan. I've been a swimmer for a while now. I got my bronze medallion training and all that business, so and I really really like Rick Veitch's run on Aquaman, and then the subsequent issues written by Will Pfeiffer, I think. Mm-hmm. And big fan of that stuff. I think it was some of the best Aquaman stuff. Peter David stuff I checked out. Not as big a fan, but still pretty good. But this, what's going on in Aquaman right now is not doing it for me. I don't know, like maybe down the road, if more stuff that I love about Aquaman is brought into this current run, I might go back and read it. But as it is now, I'm pretty sure I'm going to drop it. Supergirl took a nosedive, in my opinion. First issue was absolutely brilliant, just blew my mind away. I'm pretty sure I reviewed that on the blog. If you read that up, you'll see that I was really impressed with the first issue of Supergirl. Hmm. And it just sank from there. I don't know. The plot is really weird and kind of basic, really average. It's just not doing it for me. The art is losing it. Like Asrar was super incredible in the first issue, and I think the schedule is kind of messing them up. I really admire the artists and the writers' efforts to stick to the schedule, but I mean, I got a budget, so I got to make a decision. Yeah. So I'll probably try one more issue of each of those titles, and if it doesn't sell me, I'll drop them.
Yeah, and the nice thing is you can always go back, you know, when they're in the trade. I mean, it's going to be quite a time later, but you know, I think John's stuff for me has always read better in a trade. He sometimes the dialogue is so thin, you know, you blow through an issue in like a minute and you're like, wow, that what happened to my $3? So
Yeah. And his propensity, I don't want to just to turn on a slam on Jeff Johns because I've made my point clear on the blog, but his propensity for he's got a thing where if he wants you to he wants to make sure you know something that he's trying to establish in the story, he repeats it multiple times per issue. And it gets a little bit grating. Like as I get kind of tired and bored of that. So I don't know. Maybe maybe the Jeff Johns honeymoon is over and I need to move on and maybe try again later. I don't know. I'll see if the when if they go in the dollar bin, I'll check them out. Yeah, those are two characters. It's kind of sad because I have a certain amount of character loyalty, eh, towards those two characters, Supergirl and Aquaman. But you know, you gotta do what you gotta do.
And I think he's going the right direction with it. It's just, you know, different strokes for different folks. We've all got certain characters that we love, but don't necessarily care for maybe the writer at the time or the style of writing. I know a lot of people that didn't care at all for the Superman title, not Action Comics, but the Superman one, and I've been picking that up and I love it, especially how meaty it is. It takes you quite a while to get through a Superman issue, and I'm kind of sad that I can't remember who the author is right this second, but
Wasn't it
Buzz
Perez?
Perez, yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of sad that he's going to be leaving after the sixth issue because I've really enjoyed the fact that it takes me a while to get through a single issue. It kind of harkens back to when we used to read comics.
Yeah, DC's been announcing a lot of writer change-ups at issue six. Gil Simone is off Firestorm. Perez is off Superman. There's a third one I remember. I think was it James Robinson who's writing Stormwatch?
Think so.
Anyway, there Stormwatch is getting a new writer starting issue seven, I think. And well, Morrison's not off Action Comics, but there's going to be a issue five and six are going to be written by a different writer,
That's right.
and I think they're going back a little bit further in the past still with this story, and then the current storyline starts again at issue seven. So they're shuffling things around a little bit there.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna move things along because I got a little off tangent there, but that's okay. We can always keep things a little freer here if we want to and discuss things like that. But I wanted to make sure that we plugged the Stash My Comics site just briefly. We're not going to hit people over the head with it, but there might be some people listening to the podcast that have never been. And if you just want to give a quick blurb about what it is and why they should go there.
Yeah, stashmycomics.com. Right now is a really good time to check it out. A lot of great changes, new features being added to make it an even cooler website. The basic idea is that it's a comic collection tracking software. It's completely free. You can use it to catalog your comic books. We got a database of 220,000 comics or something like that, and growing all the time, adding new comics, the modern ones, to the Golden Age, to all sorts of comics are being added there. You can search by our database by character, by writer, by publisher, by title, and you can cross-reference things up the yin yang if you want. It's got tons of great tools for you to track your collection. Also, we're adding more features for members to use. You can rate and review your comic books and comment on other people's reviews now. That's a recent feature. So, and all those reviews appear in a feed on the front page. So it's really cool to kind of read everybody's opinion on different comic books, and our user base is distinct in that if you notice the reviews on the homepage, you've got some of the recent comics, but you also got like reviews of comics from the Bronze Age and Silver Age, and so it's kind of an interesting melting pot of or mixing pot or whatever the expression is of different people reading different books from different eras, and they're all put together. So it's really cool, really interesting. You can we also got a blog with really great content, such as this podcast, excellent articles on classic runs, comic book related news. We got different columns written by different writers, which are always interesting, entertaining, and informative. So yeah, check out the stashmycomics.com/blog. We also got a forums, really friendly bunch of people, very, very nice to new readers. You'll never be brushed off because you're a noob. So go check that out. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook. Twitter is at Stash My Comics.
Cool. Yeah, I need to start getting your tweets through my computer now that I have a good connection at work. I can actually follow what you're doing there. I like the site because what you were talking about, the variety, and with the new comics and the old comics and the database and the forum, the blog, and now we got a podcast. There's really not another site you need to go to. There's other great sites, but I encourage everybody to go and check it out. And if you have any questions for this podcast or would like for us to answer something on the show, give a shout out, just email me at podcast@stashmycomics.com and we'll be happy to answer any questions. So we are going to move on. And oh, I wanted to mention iTunes. I do want to get us on iTunes. And after we wrap up this episode, I believe I have everything ready to go ahead and upload it to iTunes. So that might take another week or so. We'll, at the next episode, we'll hopefully be able to direct you somewhere so you can start subscribing to us on iTunes and giving us reviews and all those kind of nice things.
Leave a review on iTunes if you're listening to this off iTunes, and leave a good review if that's okay. And unless you hate the show, if you hate the show, well, maybe instead, like I don't know, go to the restaurant.
Take a walk. Well, special segment time, and this time we're going to do at the library.
At the library.
And Jason went to the library and he found some really cool books. In fact, one of the cool books he's going to talk about, I read quite a long time ago. Which one do you want to discuss first?
Let's do this one you read, Charles Burns X'd Out. I read this and it happened.
It's a trip. It is a crazy book.
I'm not really sure what I read. I think I liked it. I think the biggest thing that tripped me up is that the library put their Dewey Decimal sticker on the bottom of the spine, which covers up probably that this is volume one. And I was under the impression that this was a standalone story. So I kept reading this, thinking like this is going to have an arc because it seems to be fairly straight. Like the main narrative is fairly straightforward. It's intercut with these kind of bizarre things. But I was like, where's. And then I turned to the last page and I was like, this doesn't make any sense. What? And then I saw the very last page, the like the sort of like the inside cover, and it says next, the hive. So yeah, then I realized I'd read the part one of something, and it's kind of like started to make sense, but it's still a quite a bizarre book.
Yeah, I think it's one of those. I mean, it's so cryptic that, and maybe it was his intention for it to be that way and for you to make up your own interpretation, as a lot of artists often do. It's kind of like, well, what do you think it means? You know, so I didn't really know what it meant either. And it's been so long since I've read it, but I remember it really sucking me in. I believe I just read it all on one sitting.
So did you get to read the entire series?
No, just that first book was the only one available.
Okay.
I would have picked up the other one if they'd had it.
Like, I don't know if even the rest of the series is available. Like, I don't know anything about this, what year it was published, or I just, you know, that's the fun thing about the, it says 2010 here.
2010, yeah.
So maybe volume 2 isn't out yet, like.
I'm looking on Amazon here, there's quite a few of his books, but I don't know if any of them are the follow-up to this.
Well, that's the fun thing about the library. You just pick something out. You don't really know what you're gonna get. But I picked it up because I'm a big fan of Tintin.
Mm-hmm.
I used to read Tintin as a kid. I grew up in a French community, and the French school, of course, for kids would stock comic books in French, les BD. En français, it was the and one of the classic European Belgian comics is Tintin. So I do believe Hergé was Tintin was Belgian. Anyway, this whole format, the way this is presented, and the style of artwork on the cover, and the look of the character,
mm-hmm.
It harkens very much to Tintin.
Yeah, it's very close.
Yeah, even the egg design, there's an egg with kind of these weird like red and white blotches on it,
mm-hmm.
On the cover. It harkens to it's a direct reference to a Tintin cover where I believe there were like mushrooms of this color, like Amanita mushrooms probably. So, and even there's this character in the book. He does this performance art, and he wears a Tintin mask, and he calls himself Nit-Nit, which is Tintin backwards.
Huh.
So I don't know if this is supposed to be some sort of like Tintin metatextual reference or what. I don't know. I'd say fans of like Art School Confidential,
mm-hmm.
And Daniel Clowes, that kind of thing, probably like this.
Yeah. Yeah, especially if you can pick it up at your library and you like off-the-wall stuff, you like independent comics, definitely pick it up. I haven't been able to find it at my library here where I just moved, which is kind of disappointing because now I'd like to kind of check it out again.
If I see the subsequent volumes, I'll check it out. I mean, it was enough for me to be interested.
Yeah.
Another book I read was We Three that I picked up at the library. This is a standalone story. It's by Grant Morrison, who I've recently been a convert of. I was not a fan of Grant Morrison a few years ago because my first experience with Grant Morrison was with the Rest in Peace Batman storyline. And I totally was not expecting that sort of story in the Batman book proper. So it kind of was a curveball. But since I've kind of become more familiar with what he's trying to do with the medium of comics and have begun to appreciate some of his work a little bit more. And this is one of probably the more accessible of his stories. It follows the story of three animals, a dog, a cat, and a rabbit, who have been part of a military project to basically weaponize animals, make them soldiers. So these three animals have like these, their cerebral cortex wired to this exoskeleton, like a robotic armor.
Mm-hmm.
which are basically, so they become living weapons. But a army sergeant or general or some high-placed military authority orders the termination of these three animals so that they can move the project forward. I forget exactly what his reasoning on why killing these animals is necessary. But the scientists responsible for having kind of cared for these animals and hooked them up to this armor has become too attached to the animals, which is understandable because them being wired by to their brains, they can speak a little bit. Their thoughts are translated into words through a voice box. And the way they speak is so endearing and so it's just so you can tell that Grant Morrison has a lot of affection for animals. In fact, during writing Animal Man, he went vegetarian or vegan even maybe just because he researched animal cruelty and was so affected by what he learned that he decided to make the decision to not eat animal products. So you can tell that this is written with a lot of affection. And I personally believe that animals have a lot more sentience than most of us give them credit for. And this was really a moving story. These animals are allowed to escape by this scientist, and they're sort of a little family, and they're kind of running from the government. And the adventures they go through and the bond they share is really quite touching and moving. I'm not the kind of guy who cries at movies, but I'm it's not because I think I'm a big, tough man, but I just it just doesn't it just I just don't do that. But I won't lie. I got teary-eyed during the ending of this book. If anybody's listening out there who thinks that comic books are just disposable entertainment should really try this because this is a piece of literature. It's really quite a moving tale of just it's strange because it you learn something about the human experience just by reading a story about these animals. It's very well done, drawn by Frank Quitely, who's a big reason for the success of this story. So yeah, we three, Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely, check it out, free at the library.
Yeah. And I actually, once you mentioned it, I thought it was a book that I'd read, and I just pulled it up here, and I do remember reading this probably about a year ago at my library. It seems like our library has the same really good books, at least my old library. But yeah, this is a story for anybody, but particularly if you are fond of animals. I have a lot of pets. This will really speak to you. It's like he said, it's touching. It's got this sort of human element that perhaps we're bigger monster. We're more of the wild animals than the animals themselves in some aspects. And actually, on this Wikipedia thing, I don't know if you're aware of this, but it's been implied that Grant Morrison says we three is actually part of the Weapons Plus program that created Captain America, Wolverine, and Phantom X. So he may have had that in mind when he sort of created this. And actually, there was supposed to be a film that New Line Cinema optioned for that fell through the cracks, and somebody else has picked it up, but nothing has gone on with this since about 2008. So, but this would make a great sort of manga or manga type film, kind of like Ponyo or some of those other type of animal type films. I don't know if you're familiar with that movie.
No, are they, I'm assuming they're anime.
Yeah, and I'm not a big anime person, but the art in this really kind of plays off to it looks like it should be a Japanese film.
Yeah, I can see some of the techniques, like they use similar techniques. Yeah, I can see that.
I hope it does become a film because that'd be
Yeah.
really interesting to see on screen.
Yeah, I can see that working. Yeah.
Well, and you had one more that you found at the library that looking at the cover, I have read this too. I just don't remember anything about it.
Well, I'll go over it briefly because I did write a review on the blog of this. It's Asterios Polyp by David Mazzucchelli. Mazzucchelli, well known for his collaboration with Frank Miller on Batman Year One. But if you're expecting that sort of thing, you'll be in for a surprise because this is very different. It's by Pantheon Books. It won all sorts of like highfalutin and snooty awards, like New York Times Notable Book of 2009 and that sort of thing. Won some Eisners and so on. So I went in with high expectations and they were surpassed. Yeah. This is a masterpiece. This is the work of a cartoonist who's been at it for an entire career. Yeah, it's the story is about an architect who teaches architecture at a college. His name is Asterios Polyp, which is probably the best name for a fictional character ever. And he's an ass, this guy. He thinks he's all that. He's smarter than everybody else. He's right about everything. And he espouses to the reader in these diagrams and charts why he thinks he's right. And he's got it all worked out in a chart, how a belief in God is just a complex a mommy complex. And he's got everything figured out until he doesn't. He falls on hard times. His house burns down. He's basically homeless. He's got to go live with these people who he would consider to be below him, kind of low-class people, and goes through a divorce, loses the love of his life. So basically this is the story of his redemption, but so much more. It's about how each of us have a different worldview. And we always think our worldview is superior to someone else's, but this guy will teach you that you can learn something from anyone. So it's a really well done book. The narrative is not difficult to follow, but it's also not linear, so that's surprising. Mm-hmm. And it works as a multi-layered metaphor as well. So this is a book you read multiple times. And you pick up something new upon each read. It won awards, but it's not one of those things. It won awards for a reason. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, and even if you just, hang the thing on your wall. It's the colors used in this is what struck me. It's very a non-conventional sort of color palette, but man, it works. And it's very simple. It's not extremely layered. It's a lot of flat, simplistic, sort of pale colors, but he does an amazing job of artistically mapping this thing out aside from the deeper meaning behind the words.
Yeah, and that's the thing. There's so many styles of art used in this book, but not just for show. The art style changes in order to add depth to the story and tell the story more efficiently. So it's really a very impressive book. I think it's a testament to the medium of comics. In order for this to be like a motion picture or a novel, it would be something completely different. It wouldn't be the same thing. So this shows why some stories need to be comics. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very good book.
Yep. Definitely pick that one up if you can find it. If you have a library that seems to be as progressive as Jason's and mine, because mine wound up having a lot of books sort of in similar vein. Unfortunately, my new one does not. But kudos to libraries who realize that this is something that people should be reading.
Yeah, I think the director at my library is actually married to the manager of one of the comic shops in town.
Oh, that's
So she might be, you know, she might have some influence in terms of what they stock for comics.
Well, I wanted to mention just one more thing before we sort of get ready to wrap it up. I picked up something at Barnes & Noble, surprisingly, while going Christmas shopping. It's The Joker, A Visual History of the Clown Prince of Crime. It's a relatively big book, but if you're going to Barnes & Noble and you like Joker and you haven't picked it up, they've got it on 50% off, and that's cheaper than you can even get it on Amazon right now. But it's just a gigantic book, everything you would ever want to know about the Joker. Mark Hamill does the introduction. Most of you know that he's one of the more popular Joker voices in Batman animation. But it's got everything from, you know, the inspiration behind the character, the guys who initially wrote it, and then it's got all sorts of really cool pieces of paging from the old Joker comics and the newer ones. And I mean, I'm not a gigantic Joker person, but he's always been one of my favorite villains, and this was just an awesome book to pick up for $17.50. It's going to keep me busy for a while.
Cool.
I don't know if you've read it, but it's kind of a great little coffee table book. It's not just for a comic book fan. It's got, you know, the animation stuff. It's got the movie stuff. It's every single thing you ever needed to know about the Joker. So
yeah, I like those like compendiums or encyclopedias. Like, I don't own any of them, but every time I go to up here in Canada, it's the Chapters is the equivalent of Barnes and Noble. And I always check them out, like the DC Encyclopedia and that sort of thing. And I eye them, but I've never made the plunge into actually buying one yet.
Yeah, and I don't. The only other thing I own that's big is I've got a DC Comics Encyclopedia that I never pay full price for these things. I either get them used or pick them up 50% off in this case. But if you like those kind of books, check it out. I guess we're gonna go ahead and wrap up. We've hit a little over the hour mark. So, again, if you guys have any suggestions, questions, or comments, send your emails to podcast@stashmycomics.com. And Jason, do you have anything to add before we wrap up?
Yeah, if you want to email me personally and, you know, complain or give me praise, or you want to send me cookies, you can email me at jasonnewcomb@stashmycomics.com. And yeah, please check out the site, go to the forums. If some of you are listening to this, and I know you are, and you're too shy to go to the forums, this is a challenge to you to go introduce yourself in the forums. You'll see we're a nice crew.
Yep. And we're also sort of maybe discussing getting this thing going every week, maybe with some new folks coming aboard. So, you know, stay tuned for maybe some more information on that. If you happen to listen to a podcast and hear some different people, you'll know why. But this will keep everybody that wants to be involved. This isn't just a thing for Jason and I. We want other people to get active in this and help us out.
Yeah, we're gonna grow this thing. This thing's gonna happen. Let's just stay tuned.
Yes, stay tuned. Well, let's go ahead and wrap it up. And we thank you guys for listening. And we'll see you next time.
Toodly-doo.